David, thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Hey, let's give some background about yourself and how this new book, Vision or Mirage, came to be.
Well, I grew up in Delaware, and I went to university at Oxford, where I studied Arabic because I wished to join the Foreign Service. And I spent 30 years in the Foreign Service. Half of that time was in Saudi Arabia. That's unusual. And when I finished, there were a number of people who thought that I really had an obligation to write down some of what I had learned for my future colleagues. And I did that, and the book became a book of really of general interest. We tried to write it less encyclopedic and more of a general interest. So the book, which exists today, is really an effort to explain a country which is very important, but also very poorly understood to the American public. And so that was the origin of the book. And so far, I think it's succeeding in what we're trying to do.
Explain that last statement further that you just made. It's a country that's poorly understood, if you will. Explain more.
Well, Saudi Arabia is an extremely unusual place. It's a strange place, even you could argue a weird place. It's the last strategically important monarchy in the world. It operates, I used to tell the young officers in the embassy that, you know, take your political science book and throw it away. Go get a book on how Henry VIII ran Tudor England, and now you'll understand how Saudi Arabia works. Its economy is very odd because in most countries, certainly in the United States, the living standard of the people is directly related to their productivity. In Saudi Arabia, the two are divorced. The Saudis live a much higher standard of living than their productivity would entitle them to because so much wealth just flows from the ground. There are many reasons. For example, another thing, they don't really have a monetary policy because their interest rates are set in the United States because their currency is pegged to our dollar. That's a bit complicated, but basically they don't have a monetary policy. They don't have a fiscal policy because they don't have taxes. So all of these things make it an unusual place. The flip side of that is that they have not been very welcoming to foreigners. So not only is it a difficult place to understand, it's a hard place to get to even if you want to understand it. So for those reasons, it's been a poorly understood country.
All right, so let's go into some great detail about this new book, Vision or Mirage, Saudi Arabia at the Crossroads. Tell us more.
Well, the book is, the thesis of the book is that Saudi Arabia has been more stable for many years than many people predicted. It is today, perhaps, in fact, not perhaps, certainly less stable than many people presume. That matters to the rest of us, and that is the, if you will, the argument of the book is that that does matter to us. That many of the reason that it is less stable today is because it is going through very significant social and economic changes. Most of those changes are ones which we have been encouraging them to do for a long time. Most of them are things that we would consider to be moving in the right direction. The emancipation of women being the most obvious, but there are many others. The reduction of power of the religious authorities. These are things which we should encourage and should support and should want them to succeed. Economically, they're trying to diversify their economy away from oil so that they have something to do when the oil runs out. So the country is changing. We should encourage that, but we should recognize that it has made the place less stable, and we should be trying to help them. That really is the argument of the book.
How long have you been writing books, sir?
Oh, well, I've been writing political reports for 40 years. You know, that's really what political officers do. They are essentially journalists who write articles that don't get published in the newspaper. So I've written, you know, essays every week for most of my life. Writing the book was a little different in that it had to be structured, and it was longer, and that took a couple of years to write the book.
Some things that have been said about your work, this comes from the New York Times. I wish that every member of Congress would read it before voting on any measure related to Saudi Arabia. I wish every American pondering the frictions of our long relationship with the Saudis would read it simply to understand. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. The Saudis have a, how would you phrase, they have a public relations problem, a very serious public relations problem, in that most of the things that we hear about them are the negative things, which are true. But there are positive things which often are overlooked. The other element which is often overlooked is just how good a partner they have been for the United States for 75 years. Of all the major countries in the Arab world, they are the only ones that stuck with us completely through the Cold War. If you look at Syria, Iraq, Egypt, Libya, all of these countries at one time or another were our opposition in the Cold War. The Saudis have always been stuck with us. They play an important role today in oil markets. We could talk about that at great length, but we are not totally independent of what the Saudis do, and the rest of the world is certainly not independent of what the Saudis do in oil markets. And by and large, they are a responsible steward of oil markets. We can talk about that in detail if you want. But they have been very cooperative in counterterrorism. Recently, they have been promoting a much more moderate view of Islam than they did in the past. And they are a very important factor in resolving the Arab-Israeli dispute. So for many reasons, the Saudis have ways to be helpful, and they have been helpful, and we should continue the relationship. We should encourage them to change some of the negative elements of their society, and we have ways of doing that, and we should do that. But we should also recognize the positive elements of the relationship.
Former Secretary of State and National Security Advisor Henry Kissinger calls your book clear-eyed and illuminating. Response to that?
I think Dr. Kissinger was correct. It's clear-eyed and illuminating in the sense, well, I don't know if I should say it's illuminated. I certainly think it's clear-eyed in the sense that the book is balanced. There are negative things that the Saudis have done, and it doesn't attempt to gloss over those, nor does it attempt to gloss over the problems, the many problems, social, economic, and political problems that they face today. So it is a balanced assessment of our relationship with the Saudis and the achievements that the Saudis have done, as well as their shortcomings. And I think that's another element that perhaps the book is slightly different than others, and that it does recognize what the Saudis achieved over the last 50 years. They were an extremely backward, extremely poor country. I mean, you know, in 1950, there were two high schools in Saudi Arabia. You couldn't study French. You couldn't study chemistry. These were considered religiously unacceptable. Girls couldn't go to sports. There were no movie theaters. I mean, that was actually even more recently than that. That was in the 70s that they ended movie theaters. They had them for a little while. You know, this was a place that was ruled by a religious police force. The changes that have happened are really pretty spectacular. And the fact that women can drive is just really the tip of the iceberg. There are many. Women used to not be able to get a cesarean delivery without the permission of their husband or father, written permission. They couldn't travel outside the country without the written permission. They couldn't go to university or get a job even. Certainly not open a business or a bank account without written permission of their guardian, which is usually their husband or their father. All that's changed now. So it's a significant. So I think the book is clear-eyed in the sense that it assesses both the negative and the positive.
What do you want readers to take away from this book?
That's a good question. I think they should come away with a more balanced assessment of Saudi Arabia as a country, in terms of the success and the failures they've had, and they certainly have had plenty of failures, and certainly in terms of diversifying their economy. So I would like people to have a balanced view of what the Saudis have achieved or have not achieved, and I would like them to have a more balanced view of what the Saudi-American relationship has been. It's been carried out largely at a very high level by a few senior, usually it's the president and the king. Most of our relationships with major foreign countries are well institutionalized, and it doesn't really matter who the ambassador to London is. Our relationship with Britain is pretty solid, and in fact, institutionalized over many years. As I said, Saudi Arabia is the last strategically important monarchy in the world. It's a monarchy. The king makes the laws. And how the president gets along with the king makes a big difference in that relationship. And so people, I think, because it's been conducted at such a high level, the average American has a poor understanding of how that relationship really functions. And so hopefully, by reading this book, they might understand that better.
We are talking to America's leading expert on Saudi Arabia, Mr. David Rundell. As he's speaking to us from Newark, Delaware, before we even started our conversation, you were giving me some of your background. You said you have a home in Wilmington. You have a home in London, but you live mostly in Dubai. I have to ask, what is your favorite part about living in Dubai?
That's a great question. Dubai is, I've lived there pretty much since 97, on and off. The place is dramatic. I mean, it has really changed very substantially. It has grown. It has developed. It is vibrant. It is a truly multinational city. I mean, if you think of New York as being a very multinational, or London being a very multinational city, Dubai is even more cosmopolitan than that. If you go to the airport in Dubai, the places that flights are going to, I mean, you can get a flight from, well, you can get seven flights a day to London before COVID, but it's almost like a bus. You just go and go to the airport and you can get on a plane. But you can fly to Buenos Aires or Moscow or Beijing, all from the Dubai airport. It's a very interesting place in terms of the number of different kinds of people that are there. And that's reflected in what goes on in the city. All kinds of different people doing different things, different kinds of restaurants. It's a very cosmopolitan place. I think that's what makes it interesting. It certainly doesn't have the history of a London or the dramatic architecture of Washington, though it does have a lot of interesting buildings, including the tallest skyscraper in the world. So that, I think that's what makes it interesting. It has a buzz to it. It's a growing and new city, and it's dynamic.
David, final words about your book, Vision or Mirage, Saudi Arabia at the Crossroads.
Well, I just, as I say, it's Saudi Arabia is an important country. It's poorly understood. I hope that people read this book to have a better appreciation of what Saudi Arabia has become over the last 50 years and how that affects the United States and in terms of peace with the Arab-Israeli dispute and counterterrorism and a variety of other things. So I think that's the bottom line, that hopefully people will have a better understanding of that.